Welcome to the 20% True Podcast, Season 2, Dubious Creatures, Episode 2, The Gremlins. I'm Carolyn Rahman. The small waiting room at the Department of Transportation reminded Daryl of a dentist's office, except there were more model trains and buses arranged on the tables. They were all souvenirs you could get at the CTA gift shop, but here they looked less like toys and more like hyper-accurate models. Even the small display of plush Snappies, the CTA's mascot, looked as though it had never been touched. His seat was too low to the ground to be dignified, and he dreaded the moment when the door would open, and the first impression he would make would be that of a drunk bear in a beanbag chair. He ran his hands over the lapels of his suit. The clock ticked. His briefcase shuddered next to his ankle. The waiting room door opened, and a short white woman with a crisp ponytail and a business suit leaned out. "Mr. Green?" She smiled. "Tina Blackwell." Her smile didn't falter as he hauled himself up, rebuttoned his suit jacket, and shook her hand. "Come on back. Are you looking forward to the weekend?" she asked, leading him into a meandering hallway. "Yes, I am," he said. "Have you been apple picking yet this year?" Daryl had never been apple picking in his life, and had no plans to ever do so. But he said, "No, not yet." She laughed, a little tinkling thing, like not apple picking yet was funny. "Well, you still have time." They walked into an office with two people sitting behind a long table and a podium on the other end of the room. Tina gestured to the podium and took the last empty seat behind the table. "This is Mark Field and Addison Harrington," she introduced, "and this is Daryl Green, who has a presentation for us." "Hello, Daryl," the older man said. "Mr. Field." He had an abnormally wide tie with red, white, and blue stripes. "You have big weekend plans?" Daryl wondered why they kept asking him that. Did he look like he was ready to clock out and get a beer? Had he accidentally worn his sweatpants instead of his suit? Maybe this was just their standard small talk. "I was thinking about going apple picking," he said. "Fun! The family will love that!" Daryl nodded, even though he wouldn't describe his roommate as the family. The third member of the Tribune-esque audience, a severe woman who was apparently Miss Harrington, was on her phone and didn't say anything, apple-flavored or not. "All right, young man," Mr. Field said. "What have you got for us?" Daryl had jumped through so many hoops to be here in front of these people. He'd waited on hold for hours and been passed around from department to department. He'd filled out forms and applications and scheduled and rescheduled and re-rescheduled meetings. In the grand scheme, it wasn't the hardest part. Less taxing than testing and observing and experimenting, with fewer trips to the ER than his adventures gathering his test subjects. But the bureaucracy was stressful and aggravating in different ways, ways in which he was much less adept and which he found much less interesting. Now he was here, finally, and he couldn't mess it up. He took a deep breath. "You, of course, know the urban legend attributing mechanical failures on the CTA trains to a kind of rodent-like vermin that chewed through the wiring and loosened bolts. The CTA has even encouraged these rumors through some lighthearted self-deprecation. Snappy the Gremlin, whose popularity has taken off since he was introduced last year. These creatures live in dark tunnels, or up on the elevated tracks, or in the innards of the train, so they're hard to spot. A great many people doubt their existence at all. Sure, they'll make jokes about the gremlins and buy a Snappy keychain, but they know, deep down, that Snappy's not real. He's just a scapegoat. A recent investigation, however, undergone in a joint effort between the CTA and Chicago Animal Care and Control, revealed that there is a significant infestation on the CTA trains. The results of this investigation were dismissed by the general public as a publicity stunt, like, say, Santa Radar on the Christmas Eve news. You yourselves may not believe that gremlins are real, just sightings of bats and rats and everyday mechanical error." He set his briefcase flat on the podium and unsnapped the clasps. but I assure you, they are real. He pulled back his hand, and the briefcase burst open, jumping in the air as a gremlin burst out. His audience startled, but the gremlin was tethered with a leash, from a harness around its chest to an anchor built into the briefcase. When the gremlin hit the end of its tether, it crashed back into the briefcase to tug on its leash and scrape at the case's sides. It did not look as cute as Snappy. It was like a leathery hamster with bat ears and frog legs. Its splayed fingers ended in suction cups, and a pair of velociraptor-like talons clicked from between its toes, tapping the side of the briefcase, peeking over the rim. Its eyes were wide and solid black, set on either side of its head. A thin, pale film of an eyelid lowered to protect it from the bright fluorescent lights. Daryl now had everyone's attention, even the distracted Miss Harrington. He continued to talk over the gremlin shuffling. The gremlins are a real problem, estimated to cause an annual $8 million in damage, $3,000 of delays, and... He paused for emphasis. The Green Line derailment this summer. As long as we ignore that this is a problem, brush it off as hearsay and rumor, there will be no solution. However, since this is a real, tangible problem, there is a real, tangible solution. He reached into his inside breast pocket and pulled out a rectangular device, a little thicker than a phone. Even though everyone else that had handled it used it like they were texting on their phone, cradled between both hands with their thumbs flying over the screen, Daryl always held it like a tricorder from Star Trek, held in one hand while typing on the screen with the other, waving it around more than was necessary. He spent the last 3 years perfecting it, tinkering with it with tiny screwdrivers and a soldering iron that he'd bought from a man who gave him dirty looks like he'd suspected him of using it for domestic terrorism or bizarre gang violence. He'd driven to Purdue for lectures on echolocation. He'd requested so many books from interlibrary loan that the librarians greeted him by name and asked how his grandma was recovering from her stroke. The device was his life. And it was all going to be worth it. Worth it when he told his mom that she'd never be stuck on the Red Line subway train in the dark for over 2 hours with strange men getting up in her space ever again. Worth it when he told his auntie that she'd never be fired from another job for being late because of a train signal malfunction. Worth it when he told his roommate he'd gotten revenge on the gremlins that had broken his leg in the derailment. Revenge for the huge, stiff cast and the weeks he'd spent laid up on the sofa or hobbling around on crutches. He tapped a few buttons, swiping his finger over the slider, and the device emitted a tone, higher than human hearing, but present enough to prick at human attention, to get people to cock their heads and listen harder, or work their jaw until their ears popped. The gremlin keened, hunkering down into the briefcase as if it could hide. It clutched and stroked at its head as if trying to remove spiderwebs, and then it made a break for it, charging away from Daryl, scrambling headfirst down the far side of the podium, until its leash reached its full extension and it started to pull the briefcase down behind it. Daryl put a firm hand on the briefcase to hold it in place, and the gremlin struggled a moment more before Daryl shut off the tone. "As you can see," he said, "the gremlins have a strong reaction to certain high-pitched tones. In fact, they are adverse enough that they will abandon a train car and not return to it. I've brought two proposals. In the first, small teams can sweep through the 98th and Howard rail yards, clearing the gremlins from the areas. With this, you should see a significant drop in gremlin infestation with limited exposure and manpower. In the second proposal, I suggest installing one of these devices in each car. That would be more expensive, but also more effective. I've provided proposed budgets for both." He reached into the front pocket of his briefcase and slipped out three plastic transparent folders, formatted with care and printed off and bound to Kinko's. The committee before him sat in silence. They did not take the proposals he offered them. He had their attention, and they didn't look unimpressed necessarily, more like they were waiting. Waiting for some sign that he didn't know, for some cue he wasn't giving them. Waiting to tell him to get lost. He waved the folders a bit, taking an abortive step forward, but they didn't seem interested. The gremlin moved its suction fingers over one of the brass hinges in the case, hoping no one would notice its investigation. Thank you for your time. He worked hard not to end his presentation with a question. Tina stood and crossed the room. For a second, Daryl thought she might walk out, but instead she shut the door and returned to her seat. With the door closed, Mr. Field said, Well, Mr. Green, this was really quite innovative. Pretty clever. Did you invent that yourself?
Yes, I did, Gerald said.
Amazing.
I could never do things like that. Science and math and all. Just don't have the knack for it.
He seemed to be talking more to the women than to Daryl.
Yes, seeing young people and their innovations really gives me hope for the future.
None of this sounded like they wanted to implement his device.
The old man leaned forward onto his elbows, and his voice took on a pedantic tone.
But you see, Mr. Green, we can't get rid of the gremlins.
People love the gremlins, Tina said.
Love them, Mr. Field agreed.
Did you see the plushes?
Big hits, those plushes.
But they're pests. They rip up the trains. You're losing money on repairs that could have been prevented, and he wasn't sure if it was too obvious to bring it up.
A dozen people were injured over the summer in the derailing.
The man waved him off. Bumps and bruises.
Tina leaned forward this time. Now she too sounded patronizing.
What you have to understand, Mr. Green, is that if something goes wrong on the trains, it's the gremlins. It's not us.
Imagine a world without gremlins, where mechanical failures and train delays and derailments can't be blamed on something cute and fuzzy. Instead, all of that would be on us. She laughed. Could you imagine?
People love Snappy, the man agreed. They don't mind Snappy making them late.
But Daryl felt off balance. They didn't seem to grasp the most basic of tenets. Gremlins hurt people. Stop the gremlins from hurting people.
But without the gremlins, those mechanical failures wouldn't happen.
Of course they would, the old man said. Oh, you must really think a lot of us to blame everything on the monsters.
But you could at least fix some of it. It couldn't fix all the mechanical problems, but surely enough to make a difference.
Yes, but at what cost?
He glanced down at his proposal.
$75,000?
No.
It's at the expense of our image.
You care more about your image than people's safety?
Don't be so dramatic. People are hardly in danger.
A train derailed over the summer.
And that was tragic. But as I said, there were no serious injuries.
The gremlin in the briefcase needled at the head of the pin in the hinge. Soon it would loosen it.
You say, Daryl said, that the way things are, the blame isn't on you, it's on the gremlins.
That's right.
But if you could do something about the gremlins, then those actions are on you.
And he'd lost them completely.
The old man frowned. There's no need to come in here and get snippy. You've got a great career ahead of you, young man, but not if you can't keep your temper.
Thank you for coming in today, Tina said.
Miss Harrington watched him with narrowed eyes, looking 5 seconds away from calling security.
He darted his hand in to jab a hinge pin back into place and closed the briefcase before the gremlin knew what was what. He slipped his folder back into the side pocket. Thank you for your time. He didn't let his shoulders sag until he was out of the building, standing in the parking lot. The green line roared by overhead. They didn't want to make things better. Even though he told them what to do and handed them the technology on a silver platter, all they really had to do to make a difference was hold his device in their hands and walk through the rail yard, like they would ever walk through a rail yard. He could probably get a grassroots movement of volunteers to walk through for them at no expense to the CTA. But even then, they wouldn't make the effort. They wouldn't make things better. They wouldn't do right by the people who rode the trains. They wouldn't do right by their neighbors. Daryl knelt and popped open his briefcase. The gremlin blinked in the light, blinded long enough for him to snap open its harness. Sensing its freedom, it fled, slipping under the nearest car and climbing up into its innards, where Daryl heard a metallic scrabble and a distinct ping. He closed his briefcase with a snap and stood up straight, a smirk pulling at his cheek. His device thumped against his chest. He headed for the train stop and waited for the southbound train. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahaman. Music was composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes so new people can find it. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments and ask questions. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at Carrie and the Hits.